This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it. Terrific header. Callum Robinson. Super ball in.
Great feeling. We have to treasure these nights.
And you're very welcome along to the RTÉ Soccer Podcast. It is a sad time, the passing of Jack Charlton, aged 85. Terrific memories, of course, Euro 88, Italia 90, USA 94, all those highs, and of course some lows as well. Jack was Jack, a very abrasive style in terms of his management. And we're going to chat about Jack Charlton and his legacy. I'm joined by Pat Fenlon, the Linfield General Manager, Martin Russell, ex-UCD Bray and Limerick manager, Graham Cummins, ex of Watford. We'll be chatting to him about where his future may lie. And also, as ever, joined by James O'Toole from Soccer Republic. Pat Fenlon is with me here in studio. And Pat, you played under Jack Charlton. First of all, what are your memories of the man?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to play a couple of games, one an under 17 international and one a B international, at Talca Park against Denmark. So, you know, not too much, fairly straightforward and basic direction how to play the game. You know, but I think I was also fortunate enough to be able to be in Stuttgart, and we beat England at Anfield when his last game against Holland. So, probably savoured it from both sides. But I think his legacy will be that, you know, he brought football to a different dimension in this country. You know, we'd always nearly got to tournaments, and, you know, hard luck stories around with Owen Hahn's team as well, which was very unlucky. But it just made us, you know, to be able to stick our chest out and say that we were football people, and, you know, we had that good feeling about ourselves then. And I think at the time as well, particularly Euro 88, the country wasn't in a great situation then economically, and a lot of unemployment around the place. And, you know, I just think it gave everybody a lift. We all go back to them days of, you know, the parties, the flags, the kerbs painted green, white and orange. Mm. It was just you know, even there's films made about it. So it was just a great time to be involved in football, I think. And his legacy will be that, you know, he changed the game in this country in relation to where we were in the pecking order. And, you know, he will always be seen as a man that is, you know, and rightly so, held up at the top end of football. I suppose legendary is probably used too much of the time, but I think when you're in the context of Irish football, and even what he did with England to win a World Cup, and obviously he played over 700 games for Leeds, 21 years at one club, you know, the man has done everything, and he'd be highly remembered here and regarded, you know, at the highest levels, I would think.
Yeah, and you travelled as a fan with the boys in green.
Yeah, I travelled to Stuttgart. I mean, a friend of mine, which Martin will probably know, Jerry Lostey out of Finglas, we jumped on a plane and got to, we went to Stuttgart, we went to Hanover, we went to Gelsenkirchen and seen the three games. Just a great time. Like I said, I was only 19 years of age. I was playing with Pats at the time, and it was just a great time to follow, you know, the team. Like you said, we hadn't been to a tournament, so to get to a tournament, to be able to go, and then obviously to play England in your first game, it doesn't, you know, that's the stuff dreams are made of. And then to actually beat them on the day, we got absolutely battered. And Packy was brilliant in goal, but Ray scored that memorable goal, and great times.
Martin, you also had an outing or two under Jack Charlton. You were a very cultured player in your time. What was he like in the dressing room?
Again, first of all, it was sad to hear of Jack's passing. Yeah. As Pat said, he has left a footballing legacy in Ireland. Many, many supporters will, you know, forever remember the times that they've shared when we got to, you know, tournament finals. So, but there was a couple of games that I managed to play. There was one in particular I remember. It was a friendly game at Lansdowne Road. And we were playing Manchester United. There was it was the Irish selection, but a lot of senior players pulled out. So there was places that were given to lads that were playing in the League of Ireland, and I was playing in the North at the time. I think Pat played in that game, did you, Pat?
Yeah, I was on the bench that day, Martin. I didn't actually play, but I was there.
we played in the game, and a couple of things I remember. It was a real hot game, and United won 2-0. But for some, at the end of the game, and I've been playing a few too many sideways passes for Jack's liking. But what happened was, at the end of the game, they announced man of the match, Ireland's number 11, which was myself at the time. So I felt, you know, I must have done some things right. But I walked off the pitch sweating. And first person I see, big Jack in the dressing room. And just as I walked by him, he just said, "I don't know how you got that, son." I'm thinking, as I said, I probably played too many sideways passes for him. But and the other times I would have come across Jack was when we played under 21 games, where the senior team and the under-21 used to travel together. We'd have the under-21 game the night before, and Morris was there in charge of the 21s, but Jack was always around. So, again, good memories, and sad of his passing, yes.
James, your recollections, because for younger listeners to the podcast, they've watched over the course of the summer because of the coronavirus, all the reruns of Italian 90 and Euro 88. They were special times for those of us who grew up in those days. But his legacy, how would you view his legacy? Because people, of course, will be critical of the style of play, and Eamon Dunphy was one such critic, and there's a danger there'll be a lot of rose-tinted glasses on, but his legacy and the impact he made and that team from 1988 made in terms of the growth of football in this country was enormous, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was enormous. Let's not dodge anything here. His football was atrocious, and he had great football players, but his exact thing was put them under pressure. Let's get results. It's not about how we win or how we get results. It's once we get results, I don't care, really. And that was the way. Like, it wasn't great football to watch, but it did ground out results. And when you look at 88 in particular, as Pat said earlier, it was a depressing time around Ireland. People needed a lift, and that was the lift they needed. And you move on from there onto Italia 90 and then onto USA as well. He had a great 10 years in charge. And my main question about this is, how did Pat Fenlon afford a flight to Germany at that stage? That's what I want to know. What was Pat's paying him?
Very, very little, to be honest. It was very little. I was double jobbing at that stage, so saving up and making sure I got there. Yeah. But the other side of that as well, and you know, it was a couple of occasions. The game we played against Russia in Gelsenkirchen was a fantastic performance, absolutely. And they were a top team, but we played really, really well on the day. And you know, as James says, it was up and at them and get a forward. But we, you know, there was certain occasions. The night we drew at Wembley, which was far enough there as well. I think Quinny scored a goal, played really well that night as well. So there was some good performances in there, you know. But his style was, and he said it himself, get the ball forward as quick as possible, and then, you know, try playing that half if that's what we can do.
Yeah, I was fortunate to be there that night in Wembley. So yeah, I mean, in the broad context of football and how it's played, it was perhaps a little rudimentary, but it got results.
Yeah, I think his philosophy was he had big strikers, or he had, like he said, he spoke about Stapo earlier on. He was able to head the ball and get Aldridge around him, you know. Then he had Niall Quinn, Cascarino, you know. So do you want to build it up, build it through the midfield? We had great midfield players as well, don't forget, which probably bypassed at times. But they bought into that, which is a credit to them players as well, you know, picking up second balls and being able to play from there. So when you think of what he said there, simple was get forward, pick up second balls and play in the opposition half. Listen, it worked for us. You know, we were a team that nobody wanted to play in them days. And for a small country like us, that's some achievement.
Graham, you probably grew up listening to stories about Jack Charlton's team and the travelling supporters, and you'd have watched the programmes and the reruns of Italia 90 and Euro 88. What are your impressions of Jack Charlton?
Well, obviously, in recent years, he's been the most successful Irish manager we've had for a long, long time. Obviously, I was sad to hear the news about him. I mean, it's the type of character, it's the stories you listen to. I was just listening to one about Andy Towson saying when they went to visit the Pope, and the Pope took a particular interest in Paddy Bonner because he used to be a goalkeeper. And Bonner, I think, against Italy, and was it the Euro 88, made a bit of a mistake, and his head was down, and Jack was just saying, oh, look, get on with it. It happens, like, in football afterwards. And Towson said that, like, Jack Charlton turned around to him, the Scar and Moko and the bloody Pope would have saved that one. Like, and that's kind of, like, they're the type of managers you love. You don't see them anymore. I'd say 94, I can kind of remember USA World Cup. The Ray Houghton goal against Italy, obviously. Listen, I think everyone said it, you know, in football nowadays, everyone thinks it's got to be pretty football, all that. But I'm more of along the lines of a Jack Charlton type of philosophy. Is about winning games, and he certainly did that. And I think you can see by the responses and everyone the way he was, as not just as a footballer, of a manager, but as a person as well. Like, it's testament to him when so much people around the world are saddened to hear about that, his death.
Yeah, and what a CV, Martin, when you look at it. I mean, Pat listed out the amount of games he played for Leeds United, but a World Cup winner, a no-nonsense defender, a World Cup winner, manager of the Republic of Ireland, managerial stint, of course, as well at Newcastle and other clubs as well. So he was a man immersed in football, of course, a brother of a very fine player in Bobby Charlton as well.
I mean, undoubtedly, you know, a great footballing career, and both as a player, particularly with Leeds, and then, as you say, to go on, leave the legacy that he has with Ireland is, you know, it's commendable. And again, so again, I probably wouldn't be one of the ones that would agree with his philosophy. And I think there was, you know, in the years that followed, I think, you know, when as the game changed and things moved on, I think there was a price to be paid for that because we didn't develop the type of player ready for the next stage of the game, you know. So, but you cannot take away the results and as the level of achievement that he got by getting us to the finals. So, I mean, tremendous football and CV, and a very rare one as well. There's not many people that do and achieve and will achieve the football accolades that that he has.
Well, he was certainly a great servant to the Republic of Ireland in terms of qualification for those three tournaments in particular, and quite a character as well, and lots of great stories and tributes paid over the course of the last 24 hours or so. We're recording this podcast on a Saturday evening, and at 6 o'clock, James, on Monday evening, I bet you're twiddling your thumbs, you're rocking over and back. You cannot wait, I suspect, for the fixtures to be released for the rest of the SSE Airtricity League season. What are you like? Are you a nervous wreck?
I can't wait for it, but I have a sneaky suspicion we already know them. That's the only problem about it.
Well, do
I
tell.
I can't see us going because we've played a certain amount of matches. So I think phase one of the games will go as they were already planned.
So we'll just pick up. Is that your read of it?
Goes out.
Yeah.
I think we will just pick up for the first second section of it. And then it depends on what they plan on doing with the second section, because it depends on what happens with Europe and stuff like that, if games have to be played in Europe in that second section. But I would suggest that's the way it goes. So I think that's what Cork are home to Bowes, Shamrock Rovers, Finn Harps, Dundalk versus St. Pat's. Oh my God, what's the other two fixtures? I can't remember. They're the only three I can remember off the top of my head from way back in March. So I think that's the way we will go when we get back to football. But we've also got a cup draw to look forward to on Monday as well, which is the most exciting part, the one part I didn't think was going to happen.
Yeah, it is great, Martin, isn't it? I mean, I certainly was of the view that, you know, when the talk was that the FAI Cup might be deferred for a year because of, you know, the fixture list and trying to accommodate the fixture list, that the FAI Cup may be put on hold. I just thought that was unthinkable.
Yeah, I think, listen, it's been, you know, a tough time for everybody. And sport has suffered. With regards to the game of football, I think, like anything else, you've got to maximise what you can. So, I mean, to have the season and get as many games in as possible, but also include the FAI Cup, was always the way to go. Probably the non-league teams may feel aggrieved that they can't have their shot of glory. But as I said to you, it's just maximise what you can at this moment in time. There may still be problems ahead. Who knows? As things get opened up a little bit more, you know, will we even get to the end? But I think we've got to set out to maximise as much as we can.
Are you a little bit worried that we may not get to the end? I guess we don't know what's around the corner, I suppose.
Yeah. It changes from week to week, and you know, you listen to the experts and they say, well, we've got to be careful not opening up too quickly. So, you know, I do see bumps in the road ahead, but all you can do is just try and do the best and deal with it as it comes along.
Graham, you were with us on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. I introduced you as a Waterford striker. You corrected me at the time, saying you're no longer a striker, you're a defender. But right now, you're no longer a Waterford player. Where are you at the moment?
To be fair, when I spoke to you at that time as well, I didn't think the league would ever resume. I think Martin said it there. There could be a few bumps along the road and it might not finish. Hopefully it does. But again, it was great, I think, to see the FAI Cup being brought back in, because realistically, only Dundalk and Rovers can win the league, but you can catch them on an off day, like in the cup. So it gives teams something else to play for. But with regards to myself, I might have one or two things in the lineup. It was just kind of more of a family decision. I really enjoyed my time at Waterford and everything. Obviously, I think the big factor for me was Anil Reynolds leaving the club and Jim Crawford leaving as well. They were two big characters, and you know, when you speak to Rennie, he looks after lads big time. And even with me, like recovery days, I didn't have to travel down to Waterford. He was more than happy for me to stay in Cork, and it is a nice little commute, like, which I was happy to do at the time. But I just needed a bit of clarity. It was kind of what I was kind of looking for. I'd no manager, nothing that kind of way. Tried to speak to the chairman's son. He told me there would be a manager appointed within a week and a half. And I said, I can't wait that long, because if I need to play ball, I need to know straight away. You need to be training, really, like, you know, you can't be waiting like a few days before the season starts to get going, like that kind of way. I mean, I've been just doing all kind of long distance kind of things, and I've been doing the wrong training to be back in, so I need to get going again. And it was just a case of wanting to try and speak to the manager, but they wouldn't tell me who it was until it was officially announced. And of course, they announced it a lot earlier than they actually told me they'd be announcing it. So it was just a case of me speaking to my wife and my family, and I just felt that, like, you know, the best option for me was to just call it a day, because I was, there was just too much uncertainty going on. Like I said, again, had Alan Reynolds stayed there and everything, I think he's a big part of me going down there. I think the few months I was down there was so enjoyable, and Jim, and even to be fair to him, I think Franny Rocket staying at the club now is a massive thing for him, because I think losing so much coaching stuff, I think Waterford's built on, like, the lads getting on, everything like that, the management. So, like, you know, when a new manager comes in, the whole place might change. But I think at least Fran keeps a bit of stability for the club and keeps the lads happy there. Like,
and of course, John Sheridan has been appointed as the new Waterford manager. But you've got a couple of, by what you're saying, you've got a couple of irons in the fire, have you, in terms of the future? Because you mentioned the commute. You are based in Cork. So can we expect some news soon?
Oh, well, like I said, I can't wait around. You know, I have to get the ball moving, and that'll be pretty soon, to be fair. And I can't, like I said, again, I can't wait around. And, like, I was, at one stage, looked like I could have stayed at Waterford. Like I said, I just needed a few things to be sewn up, but I wasn't given any of them guarantees. And it just made me feel like, well, I need to move on, and that's the way the future is. But I definitely would expect something in the next couple of days, because, like I said, I can't keep going the way I've been going. I need to get in, get fresh and stuff. I mean, the season starts in 2.5 weeks if I am going to return, so I need to get match fitness and get sharpness, because that's the one thing you can't work on, is your sharpness at all. Like, you might be able to do runs, but nothing equals the movements you do on a pitch, anything. Like, you might do one training session back and it might feel tougher than doing all these 5Ks. Like, you know, 2K in training will be a lot tougher. So I have to get something sorted quick enough. Like, I can't really wait around.
Yeah, Pat, you worked at Waterford quite recently. You're at Linfield, of course, these days. You know Lee Power, the Waterford owner. The appointment of John Sheridan, it certainly raised a few eyebrows. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I spent a little bit of time down there. It's a great club, great facilities, you know, great support as well. And Lee, in fairness to Lee, he's put a lot of money into Waterford since he's been there. I think the European decision knocked the stuffing out of him a little bit, you know. So obviously bringing John in, he's a high profile manager. I think the key, and Graham probably hit the nail on the head there for them, you've 13 games left. He's not going to know a hell of a lot about the League of Ireland, you know, so the people around him is going to be important. I know Franny Rock is there. Franny's a decent coach, great lad as well. I hear John Frost has been around as well, maybe giving a dig out. So people like that, that have a knowledge of Waterford, have a knowledge of Waterford, you know, football, have a knowledge of the League of Ireland, is going to be key for John, I think, in that short period of time. I'm sure his remit is 13 games, keep us in the league, and then we'll reassess at the end of the season. So it's really important that he has some people around him with big knowledge of the League of Ireland.
Yeah, that is key, isn't it, Martin? Because it's a very, every league is different, of course it is, but the League of Ireland, and coming in with just 13, 14 games to go, you really, all clubs now have to hit the ground running. He doesn't have time for a honeymoon period or time to bed in. He's got to get results. All clubs have to try and get results straight away. So he can't really be learning on the job too much. And he is, as Pat says, going to have to depend on those around him.
No, it will be crucial that, you know, that he has the right people around him. I think Waterford will stay up. I've no doubt in that. But it depends then where they go from there. It's always difficult when a manager from outside the country comes in. It does take them a while to get used to, you know, the setup and what players they can attain. And again, it depends on his budget. What I found my time, for example, down in Limerick, you know, to attract players from Dublin, for example, to Limerick, or players from across the water, you know, there's an extra cost in that. And if you know, it depends on what he has at his disposal. But I don't see a problem in John keeping Waterford up and progressing it.
And Martin, what did you make of the format, the decision over the format? They stuck with the status quo. the majority of the Premier Division clubs, in fact 9-1, were looking for one side promoted, one side relegated, but instead the NLEC eventually went with the status quo, so we'll have playoffs in the First Division and the ninth place team will be involved in a playoff. What did you think of all of that? And it was a very long, drawn out affair, of course, as well.
Yeah, I don't understand why it was long and drawn out. I think it was, you know, it's fair enough to stick with the status quo. You know, everybody knew the rules at the start of the season. If you're a bottom team, you're relegated. If you're second bottom, you're in the playoff. There's no reason to change it. The teams that deserve to stay up will stay up, and the teams that deserve to be fighting out the bottom, that'll be the case. But I do think I'd be slightly concerned with these things that, you know, we always seem to have problems and fractions and politics in the game that, you know, people are looking after their own area, and I think we need to get a better consensus as how we move the game forward, how we get it more professional, and have a clear plan that, you know, we do justice to the game. You know, the game has been invested so much in other countries, but we don't seem to give it a proper investment here.
Yeah. Pat, I'm not going to go rehashing the arguments about the format, because we've dealt with it in the last couple of weeks, but it's been a while since we had you on the podcast. What did you make of all of that?
I'd agree with what Martin said. I think it should have been probably dealt a little bit easier. I think that the fact that the you know, the way the Premier Division clubs, you know, sort of, it says to me a little bit that the First Division clubs are making the decision. I don't think that's, you know, the way it should be neither. I'm not saying the Premier Division club should have the be-all and end-all say in it, but I think when you look at the playoff situation, the game, the amount of games has changed, so the league is not actually the same as it was. You know, for me, the playoff series could have been a straightforward one game shootout between, you know, second place and second last, you know, in a neutral venue if you wanted to give another team an option. What you have at the moment, you've got, realistically, you've got six teams in the First Division have a chance of promotion. You know, if Rovers finish in that top six, you know, it then goes down. So, you know, that's a lot of teams in a small period of time have a chance of being promoted, you know. So, listen, it's done. Move on. I think a valid point, Martin, as well. It's what's the fallout from it now? You know, are we going to see clubs fight each other because of certain people voted certain ways? So, again, it's just another talking point that we didn't need. Make the decision. You know, if we're putting people in place to make decisions, let them make the decisions and go on with playing.
Yeah. Would you be worried that there may be a lingering aftermath after the way it was handled?
Yeah, I think there will be, talking to people in the game and listening to people's comments after. I think it has had a knock-on effect already, and I just hope that it doesn't affect it too much, you know, and we get on with what's important. It's on the pitch, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm delighted to say we're also joined on the RTÉ Soccer Podcast by the Dundalk manager, Vinny Partha. Vinny, thanks very much for joining us. You had a friendly, the first friendly of the, well, I was going to say new campaign, but of course we're picking up once again against Derry on Friday. It looked well, albeit behind closed doors, but certainly the streamed footage looked very well. How are you and how are the lads? How are you gearing up for the start on the 31st of July?
Yeah, we're very good. I mean, thanks for having us on. But yeah, we're very good. We've enjoyed the being back on the pitch. It's obviously been, what, four, coming into week five, so first chance we've had to have of football, and I suppose being back on the pitch, testing a few things out in terms of around the COVID, having the ground in lockdown, and it's a new reality that players have to get used to it over the, we've just heard this week that there'll be no crowds for European games for us, unless of course we go to a group stages or something, so it's a new reality and people have to get used to it, so a little bit surreal. Games like that can be a little bit flat. It was played in mid-afternoon. Talk of some games being played for streaming reasons when the league comes back. So an opportunity to get used to things.
And what are the big challenges that you found so far that perhaps people mightn't really have thought through? Or is there any particular one or two elements of the new reality?
Well, I suppose even just listen, the two lads will probably verify this, but even as a manager, you do feed off the atmosphere, the ground. You get lost in the match, and albeit you're standing on the sideline, you can only influence so much. But even as a manager, you lack that crowd noise, that excitement. And look, it was the first game, and the result was we made 8-9 changes, both teams. But after 60 minutes, we had just equalised. And you missed the shed. You missed it in obviously Oriel Park. You missed the shed going and cheering us on for that last half an hour to get the winner in the game. And so that goes, and that will affect every team home and away. So it is. That's the biggest challenge for me, and just players coming out to the excitement of Noyes, and whether there's, you know, some grounds there's 1,000 or 2,000 or 4,000 or whatever the case may be. It's something you're gonna dearly miss as players and managers.
Yeah, and as you're saying there, like Jordan's goal, kind of he's kicking back to where he left off in Talla as far as Super Strikes are concerned, and without the actual atmosphere there behind it, it just hits the net, and there's no real, as you said, there's no atmosphere there to just hammer it home how good a strike that was.
Yeah, I actually in one sense feel sorry for him. He scored, that's his fourth that we would class of that level. The one obviously in Talla was in where there was no stand. He had one like that in Waterford last year, an outstanding strike. For me, it's probably his best goal of the lot of them. He's done the same against Cork into that same end where there's no stand behind it, and he's done the same again yesterday, and it probably takes away a little bit. I suppose that's a challenge of our league to improve our stadium, that, you know, these goals and the quality that's in our league, I feel, look that little bit better. And I suppose that's a big challenge. Even in some of the great goals we've seen in the Premiership, they probably don't look as good with empty stands behind them. So it's something we need to fix. And particularly Dundalk, we take that criticism. Someone like Jordan is an outstanding footballer, and we've got to give him a better platform.
Finny, are you on the lookout for maybe to add to the squad at this point, or are you happy with what you have?
No, we're really, really happy. I suppose what we did this year was, and we didn't see the fruits of it in the first five games, you know, international clearances and different things. I think we played Shelbourne with five defenders on the bench, and that's not like Dundalk. Even in the game in Talla where we rightly lost, we went 2-1 up, and we would normally look at a forward option and go and get the third. We just didn't have it, but... last year we had three wingers with Michael Duffy, John Mountney and Daniel Kelly. I felt that held us back. Held you back in Europe. It doesn't give you something different. Michael Duffy, wife of the baby, and he missed one of the games in Europe. We ended up playing Patrick McElhenney there. John Mountney was injured for most of the year. We had to put Jamie McGrath on the right wing. And Daniel Kelly was finding his feet at the club. So we've changed that. We've brought in Stefan Kolarich, Nathan Adua. We feel like we've really strengthened in the forward areas. So, look, if something came available, the window was open in over Europe, we'd certainly be interested. But for me, in the 8 years I've been at the club, this is the best squad we've had. And that's why we're a little bit hurt. I heard the lads speaking about the way the league is being restructured. We're a little bit hurt. 13 games is not what our squad is designed for. So it's a challenge for us.
So, yeah, well, I wasn't really going to go down the route of the format and the challenge it presents because so many people have had their say, but we haven't heard you, Vinny, on the podcast here. So your thoughts, because Dundalk very much in favour with the rest of the clubs in the Premier Division. Shamrock Rovers were the ones who went with the original format. That would be that the bottom team would be relegated, champions come up in a playoff involving the ninth place team and the teams from the First Division. Why did Dundalk take the stance they did?
Well, first of all, we didn't. We took a different stance. The day before all the vote was made, there was four options put on the table, and there was one of the options was option two, which, look, I won't confuse people, it was 18 games, restart the league because it would have been a five-month break. We felt that was the fairest way, but we were on our own in that. But the vast majority of the league clubs decided, I think it was at seven, I think there was someone else in favour of option two, but seven clubs decided that option three, which what we voted for, was the right way to go. And we had to work within our league structure. We've only counted this into a vote in Dundalk. We're one team of 10. And, we felt that 22 games even was doable. Clubs felt he couldn't go beyond October. We can't force anybody to play beyond October. My concern and the concern of the club is that the off-season in League of Ireland is 3.5 months. And I know I've said this a few times, but 3.5 months. We played five games. We returned to football after 5 months. And then we finish in October and take another 3.5 months off. That's football clubs, in my opinion, voting not to play football. But we've got to get on with it, and we've got to accept the decisions that are made. And No ill feeling towards anybody. I know Rovers are left out on their own in that decision, but people like Jonathan Roach and Noel Bourne have the good of the game. The problem is it took so long. It took nearly 4 months to be having that discussion. And when you consider like Martin and Pat there earlier on, real people with real football knowledge, and I know Pat's involved in another club, but like we didn't have real football with people understanding League of Ireland, giving us a dig out and helping make decisions and understand what managers needed, understand why clubs needed to make decisions. And that's a concern for me going forward, that you know we don't have enough football people with understanding of our league in making these decisions. And I just hope we can improve the decision-making process. But sorry, probably went on a bit there, but to make the point, Dundalk have to get on with what's laid ahead of us, and we accept all the decisions, and we understand it, and we'll get on with it.
Pat, you've been listen,
I've been banging this drum for a while, and I think Martin made a point about, you know, the game moving on and making it better, but the clubs have got to take responsibility here as well. You know, to take us serious, and we've said this before so many times, you cannot have an off season of 3.5-4 months. You know, if you look at any league around, it's 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and this is all down to clubs not wanting to pay salaries and pay wages for too long. You know, but if we're going to progress the game, you know, how are you supposed to keep a business alive that's shut down for 4 months? You know, that has to be looked into, and this is a good time. You know, that's why I said, why can't we place 27 games this season? Why can I not, you know, complete the season? You know, we've got plenty of time to play them. You know, and it's all again down to finances. We come back to that same thing all the time. Clubs are afraid that if they extend the season too long, they'll run out of money, which we understand. But if we're going to be taken seriously as a full-time professional league, we have to look at how the model is, and the model doesn't work at the moment. You can't ask players to be off for 4 months, and you can't ask clubs to survive when they close the door and don't open for another 4 months.
But the difficulty, of course, Martin, is that the clubs who perhaps don't have the financial resources or a backer, they're looking at their budgets and they're saying, we can't extend. We simply cannot afford to keep playing players. I take the point that both Vinny and obviously Pat has made here about the off-season. But if you know, those who are administrate clubs look at the budgets and look at the balance sheet, and they say, we just can't go there at the moment.
Yeah, I think this period as well, it should have given people a time for reflection. You know, one of the things that, again, I've been thinking about for a while now, and again, it's for me, it's got to come sometime soon, is an All-Ireland League for a start. You know, you've got clubs at the North. Pat's played for clubs. He's involved with Linfield now. And I've played for clubs at the North. And, you know, between, we're such a small island that the clubs at the North, they can, if they want to go into a league, for me, that's the only way forward. And the sooner we get there, the better. Because we just haven't got enough clubs down south that have the potential to do it soon. So the only way for me is, I don't know how Pat feels and whether Pat could, does he think there's an appetite up there, or does he think it's impossible in the near future for it to happen?
Pat, with your Linfield hat on.
Yeah, listen, I've been involved in the discussions with Ciarán Lewsett, and to be fair to him, he's put huge amount of work and resources into the project. You know, the disappointing thing for me from the Northern point of view was that the IFA shot it down very, very quickly without, you know, really listening to it. But I think it's still there. You know, they're still working away, and I think, you know, for a club like us at Linfield is, you know, we're a big club. You know, can we develop? How can we grow? You know, I think an All-Ireland League would help us in the long run. You know, listen, there's a fear as well for clubs. And in fairness to Ciarán Lewsett's proposal, it's got around the initial fear from both associations was you lose the European places, which is obviously a huge revenue stream for the clubs. That's now being put to bed on the basis that both leagues can play, and, you know, into another tournament at the end of that when the leagues are decided into the King of the Island or the All-Ireland winners. So, you know, there is ways around it. It's all about finances. If it can be backed up with a package, you know, from a financial point of view that will convince clubs this is the way forward, you know, this is what's happening around the TV deals, all that has to be behind it. So I think we're at a situation now, there's been a lot of talk. It probably needs a little bit, you know, of putting it together, and I say this is what can be achieved if that's an option. I think it can happen, yeah, absolutely.
If I can add into that, like, just and Pat, you had it at that Greg Shelbourne team, Bowles team. We have it at Dundalk now, where we've 24 full-time professionals. We've training ground, we've, you know, gyms, video rooms, we've players, medical department set up. I feel we're on the brink of becoming a European club. But what we can't do then is let all that go, and you have to say this, and it's not a popular opinion, but we can't let the weak drag down the strong. Because Dundalk then could end up failing at some stage, and then someone else tries it for another couple of years, and we just won't progress as a league. And that's why the strength and numbers of the All-Ireland League, if we can do it, and adding in clubs like Linfield, what a challenge for Irish clubs. What a well-run club. Push us onto a new level, and we could push Linfield onto a new level, and that has to be the drive of it, and may the best team win. And if we can protect Europe even better, European spots at the end of that, we have to push each other on.
Martin, you wanted to come in there, yeah?
Yeah, I just want to say, I mean, Pat touched on it. I mean, there are excuses, finances, etc., losing places in Europe. But, you know, but I think it needs people around the table and with help from both governments and also UEFA to make it happen. We're too small a territory just to have these two leagues, part-time leagues going on, basically. Well, we consider our league full-time, but as the lads have rightly pointed out, is it really full-time when you're up at 3.5 months and so forth? But I think if we can get to that place where the package is there, you know, we have one major full-time professional-run league throughout the island. We have provincial leagues underneath that can progress, or you can get to the big league. I think the sooner the better, and it helps, you know, the future players aspire to play for the top teams in your country with realistic ambitions to play in Europe. Like if you're a Glasgow kid playing for Celtic, or you were a Belgian kid playing for a team in Belgium, we need it to happen in Ireland, throughout the island.
Graham Cummins, as a player, you're obviously on the market at the moment, but as a player who's recently came back from England after a couple of stints there, played with Shamrock Rovers, obviously with Waterford before all of that, Cork when you were here. As a player, would you fancy the challenge of the All-Ireland League? Do you think that's the route that football in this country needs to take?
I would definitely think that is 100% the route. I think with even fans, it becomes monogamous, like playing the same teams four times a year. Even as players, you get bored of playing the same teams. It'd be good challenging going up north. Maybe the travel expenses might be something that supporters mightn't go with. That would be my worry, that if a team's mid-table, nothing to play for, fans aren't going to really travel the country that long. But like I think all the lads said, it, like the league isn't working. The model isn't working. It seems to be more problems every year, and how are we just going to survive rather than how are we going to progress. That's how I see the league. It's never, this league is getting better and better. It's more, if we can survive this year, we'll come again next year, we'll face more problems, and then we'll survive. I mean, I found it quite funny at the start of the year, funny but sad, that I read a piece when the fixtures first came out going, oh, fixtures are out for the league, let's just hope by the end of it, we have all these clubs still actually in business. Like, and it's a sad reality, but that is the case with the League of Ireland as well, that half the time you don't know if every club's going to finish out the season because they might come into financial trouble. So I think it has to be something that has to be addressed with. They can't just keep going every year going, next year something different might happen, next year something different might happen. You got to put a plan in place. You got to put the right people in place that actually care about it. I mean, I always said it, it's very easy to say something, but it's another thing going in and actually getting it done. I think they need to maybe communicate more with clubs about it. It's not there, like you can see, I'd say most clubs are in favour of this All-Ireland League, but it seems to be just a case of getting that communication, getting people to sit down. I mean, how long it's taken to get to a plan of the league resuming is beyond me, and people still aren't satisfied. I mean, as a player, it was the most frustrating thing the last few weeks going, oh, the league is going to resume. Then it's like, maybe it's not because the relegation isn't going. I mean, I was telling my wife going, like, well, the league's definitely back, so it looks like I will be playing again. Then I go in the next day reading something going, oh, I think there's an objection going in again here, and go back in. No, it looks like it's going ahead. And I said, it's chaos. Like, it wrecks people's heads. And like I said, the most disappointing thing is it seems to just be problem solving rather than progressing all the time.
Yeah, I think in fairness to Kieran Lucid in that, I think what Kieran's gone through over the last couple of months, at least it has people thinking. His plan may not be all around the edges nice and perfect, but at least it has people thinking about what it could possibly be. As you mentioned, Vinny, yourself, like, there is a couple of poor clubs, and if they don't want to play football, let them go. as far as I'm concerned. If they're not up to playing in the Premier Division, relegate them if they're not up to that. But if we have an All-Ireland League where every single team in that All-Ireland League are pushing each other on, it can only be for the benefit of not just the top level of Irish football, but the levels below it, which will all come up a level to be in that main league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't want to be disrespectful to other clubs. I wasn't always involved with the best clubs. I came home for town throughout the years in fourth division. I've done most of my coaching in Leinster Senior League, to be honest with you. So I understand the levels underneath. But if we're going to improve Irish football, we've got to create elitism. We've got to have teams aspiring to be the next Rosenborg, Bataille, whether that's Dundalk, Rovers, Bowles, Linfield, anybody that wants to do it should be able to. The environment should be there to do it. And if we've got players who are effective, and I understand COVID is here, but playing 18 games in an 18-month period, more or less, 18 league games, that's not creating an environment. And the big advantage of Kieran Lucid's proposal was there was football people in and around that proposal. And while the FEI, the new FEI, have really made an effort, I feel, you have to question, they're looking for a new director of the league. That job has been advertised internally. And maybe the best person to run our league is in the FEI already. But why, in such a crucial time in Irish football, is that position not advertised externally? And let's see who applies. And when you look at even just on the line, you look at the experience that Martin has, look at the experience that Pat has, you think of people like John Caulfield, Brian Kerr. Yes, they need business people around them, but why aren't the real football people making football decisions in Irish football? And that's a concern for me going forward, that this crossroads we're at, that we're going to take the right turn and improve football. I'm really concerned about it.
Pat, are you concerned because we are perhaps at a crossroads? There's a new look FAI. It's perhaps going to take a little bit of time, but certainly when you listen to the likes of Mr. Owens and Niall Quinn, they seem to have their heart in the right place in terms of the future, what they see as the future of Irish football. But what do you think? Where are we at?
I'm not sure is the honest answer to that. I think I had great hope when the last regime sort of moved aside and new people came in. You know, I think that's probably waned from my point of view over the last number of months. When we see, again, the league situation about, you know, returning to play, playoffs, non-playoffs, Premier Division, Fourth Division. Again, we're still seeing issues around the new board that have gone in. You know, the old board is, you know, are we trying to railroad something through in? We're waiting on a big backing from the government financially. You know, is that only coming if certain things happen? So it's sad. I was hoping that when people moved on that needed to move on, that collective, that people said they have the game of heart in this country, get together, then we should be able to resolve it and push on. You know, my hope with the league was, again, going back to the change, that the national team has always been at top of the agenda in this country, and to a point it's, but the national league, this is the biggest league in this country, this is the highest level you could play in this, this should have priority in relation to how we move forward, and that's crucial for me in the thinking of how the FAI progresses. The national league, where we're producing players for international teams, don't forget, all the way up to senior level, you know, so we have to prioritise our league now. And I was hopeful, and I'm not saying that totally changed, I was hoping when new people came in to say, you know what, they may, all the sound bites, government involved, you know, League of Ireland been talking about in the Dáil at government level, you're thinking it's here, it's about time, we're going to see improvement. I'm not too sure now that it's going to take off to the level I thought it would be, and that would be a little concern to me. I think Vinny hit the nail on the head. It's what turn we take now. You know, do we turn a certain way and we go back? We're seeing a little bit of infighting already again. You know, let's put the game first. Put personal agendas. Put personal, you know, I see people still in positions that it's about them, and it's not about them, it's about the development of the game. And that's not just League of Ireland level, that's all levels. You know, I hear people talking about elite level at schoolboy football, that's great, but there's so many young players that just want to play football for the sake of playing football, you know, and that's got to be taken into consideration as well. So I'm not as hopeful as I was maybe three or four months ago.
Martin, your thoughts? Because we started the podcast paying tribute to Jack Charlton, the late Jack Charlton who passed away. We talked about his legacy. But of course, the legacy and the impact never really filtered down all those years to the League of Ireland and the development of the league. As Pat says, we've seen the players come through from areas perhaps not traditionally associated with football back in the day, the likes of Seamus Coleman coming through from Keely Beggs, Kevin Doyle, etc. You can go right around the country. More recently, of course, John Egan, son of the great Kerry football legend, he's come through. So there was that impact, but that never really translated itself to the League of Ireland.
No, it never did. And the game has moved on, has continued to move on. And as I said to you, in other countries, you know, the game is being invested big. We need to raise the standards right at the top in terms of get to a more professional league. Try and work our way towards that. But also, we still have problems at grassroots. I mean, I sat on the committee, the technical committee that advocated for summer football for the kids to play in the best weather. And then you have your league saying, no, we're not going to summer football. So we have a situation where kids don't play in the best weather. They decide to play in the weather where the games are called off. And until we get that sorted out as well and give, as Pat said, give the game the respect that it deserves, allow kids, all kids, to play in good weather, for example. And then, as I say, keep on attacking the top end of things by getting the clubs more professional. It's never going to be easy because of the size of the country. But we have to try, as I say, make the best of what we've got and attack both the grassroots as best we can, but equally have a professional league that the best young players can aspire to play in and progress our national team.
Plenty of food for thought. It seems to be a regular debate, of course, a regular topic on the RTE Soccer Podcast. Vinny, one thing that struck me looking at the footage from Oriel Park at the weekend, the friendly between Dundalk and Derry City, the stream. A lot of people are talking about the potential of streaming. We spoke about it at length on last week's podcast as well with Brendan Dowd of Dowd Media. But the quality of the production from Dundalk, and I know it was Gavin McLaughlin and co, who and Adrian Taff was involved as well, it looked pretty good. And I think a lot of League of Ireland fans would be very encouraged by the potential. I know Niall Quinn referred to it a couple of months ago as well. Great potential for fans in terms of streaming. Do you think there's a big future in streaming for the League of Ireland?
I think we're in a new world, so I suppose effectively no choice. As I said, Europe have announced that particularly the first couple of rounds will be played behind closed doors. So it's a new reality, and kids have to accept it and get on with it and try and be adaptable. I'm quite happy. I watched the streaming this morning just to understand again. Like, we used two cameras, we had an external company in. It was just a test run, and you know, the guys feel they left a little bit behind while they got huge compliments. It's great that they feel maybe should have done a couple of interviews and done a couple of bits and pieces, so which is great, and we can raise the standard of that. And we own the streaming of the European games ourselves, so we'll do something around that. But it's good that we've set a decent benchmark. I think there's areas of improvement. For example, the FAI are talking about one camera, and by us raising the bar, maybe they have to go up another level, and that's what we have. That's how you drive standards, improving each other and improving standards. So, huge amount of work gone into it. Even the co-commentary, that type of thing. So, it's a way forward. Can you sponsor the games? Can you run different things? You know, the next time they do it, they do a text in maybe a man of the match, that type of stuff. So fan engagement and. You've got to think outside the box for too long. And I don't want to be too negative, but too long League of Ireland clubs have just, you know, accepted that, oh, well, we can stream games, so no one's going to watch them. And at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, we've over 5,000 views at different stages of the game. That's massive. That's something that just proves there's an appetite there for them. We need to embrace it as a league, because ultimately we're not getting huge numbers through the doors no matter what we do. So we have to embrace the new way,
don't think. Yeah, I think it worked very well yesterday, it has to be said. The fact that the guys got graphics onto it and mixing between the two cameras worked really, really well. But as you said, there's a couple of things that could be sorted out, even for your season ticket holders who have already paid for their season ticket, who were unfortunately not going to see a game behind in the ground this season. It just adds that little bit extra and might even get more people to buy a season ticket next year as another revenue stream. And I think anybody who's willing to do it like Dundalk did yesterday, it worked really, really well, especially with the friendlies. As you said, the European games coming up as well, where you can have those streaming rights out into Europe, because it might be your own home ground where you can sell it on into Europe, is it's always a bonus.
Pretty much out of time. Graham Cummins, before we wrap things up, when can we expect a press release announcing your arrival by some club or other? The next few days?
Definitely within the next 2 or 3 days. I can't wait around.
Give us a clue. Come on, give us a clue. Can I have a guess?
I think a lot of people can guess, to be fair. So.
Less of a commute, perhaps, for you?
Cove is there as well, like, you know,
so either City or Cove.
How are your legs feeling after a kickabout today, then?
I don't know. You'll have to ask whoever this trialist is.
Okay, all right. Well, listen, we leave it there. Many thanks to Graham Cummins, Vinnie Perth, also to Martin Russell. James is still with us. Pat, before we let you go, a 54th league title for Linfield. Perhaps not the circumstance, of course, not the way you would want to win the title. And there was a lot of disquiet within the Irish Premiership at the Manor and the decision that was arrived at. Institute lodged their appeal. Obviously, as Linfield general manager, you're just quite happy to be champions. But your thoughts on it in general?
Yeah, listen, absolutely. You know, to a man, we wanted to finish the league and play it on the pitch and try win it out. That option was there to play two games to finish the 31 games out before the split. You know, other clubs decided that wasn't for them. You know, so I presume, you know, Niffle, the league, people running the league were left with very, very little option, you know. So we're delighted, obviously, to be champions again. 54 makes us the most successful club in the world. You know,
is
league
that
titles,
right?
Yeah. It's gone under the radar a little bit, you know. So I think when you look at that, you see the magnitude of Linfield Football Club to be able to put that amount of titles together is fantastic, you know. So yeah, but listen, it's similar, like you said, there's a lot of fallout from it, and it's a bit like the League of Ireland. You don't want that to resonate, to be still there going forward. It's about moving forward now. Easy for me to say, you know, we're looking forward to the Champions League. You do feel sorry for the likes of Institute, you know, they've had a horrendous time for the last few seasons as well, with the ground being flooded and losing that, and obviously having to play at the Brandywell, you know, so it is a hard time for them. And like everything, everybody's got a right to appeal.
And just a word as well, Alan Reynolds, of course, now with Vinny at Dundalk, but going in as assistant to Jim Crawford.
Yeah, he's fell on his feet a little bit, Rennie,
wow,
hasn't he? He left Waterford and all of a sudden he's got two jobs. So, listen, Rennie's a very, very good coach. You know, I've said that when I walked around down in Waterford. He's a very, very good coach. Graham has said there, his man-to-man management is really, really good with the players. So him and Jim are two good fellas as well. And you're hoping that, you know, that goes well for him in that position. I think it's a very, very astute signing from Vinny as well to bring Rennie in there coaching on the back of losing Rory Higgins. So, no, good appointments.
Yeah. And James, before we wrap things up, we're waiting for the fixtures to be released at 6 o'clock on Monday evening. There's a lot of talk that matches will be spread out over 3 days and possibly staggered kickoff times as well. What's your understanding?
I haven't been briefed fully on it at the moment, but I have heard of two staggered kickoffs on Friday that might go ahead. And then there's one club in particular who can't play Friday, so they're going to be looking for Saturday. So it looks like you'll definitely have a Friday and Saturday games as well. But we've still got three games. Remember, the six clubs that are only on four games played.
Yeah.
And they need to catch up their game as well. So there's bound to be a midweek game thrown in there, I would say, quite early on in the new season. In the re-kick of the season.
Can't wait. All right, listen, James, many thanks. Pat Fenlon as well. That's about all we have time for this week. Until next week, well, we'll talk to you then. And in the meantime, Jack, thanks for the memories.
What I wanted to do was very simple way of playing, because in international football, I felt the system had to be simple that we were going to play.
So a free kick to Ireland then, just inside their own half of the field. Stapleton surrounded by two white shirts. Galvin gets the ball, looking for Aldridge. England defence in a mess. John Aldridge going for the high ball, trying to knock it down for Houtana. Goal! Ireland have scored!
We used the rule. If you can get a passport, you can play for your country. People say that I abused it. I didn't abuse it. I needed to get players of quality to produce a team that could play football against the best teams in the world.
And it's tied at 4-4 in penalties. Bonner crouches like a cat on the line, hits it, and Bonner saved it! Peggy Bonner dives to his right! He saved a penalty kick! Oh, the Irish players rush up, but Big Peggy just waves them away. He can't believe it. Cascarino goes to him, Townsend goes to him. And if Vinnie wasn't hit with any great conviction, and Peggy does a little war dance, and they've gone wild. They have gone wild here in Genoa.
I hadn't smoked for about 2 years. And there was a lad, an Italian lad, just underneath me in the stand. And as I was looking up, he was smoking a fag, and I said to him, give us a cig. And he passed me one through. And I lit it, and I smoked my first fag in 2 years. Quite relaxed. You can't do anything about penalty shootouts.
The referee wants the ball respotted properly on the white dot by David O'Leary. If Big Dave can put this away, Ireland are through to the quarterfinals of the World Cup. He steps up and it's in the back of the net. Oh, yeah! Rome, here we come.
When his ball went in the net, I mean, the whole place just lifted. Everybody leapt to their feet from the touchline. Everybody ran onto the park towards Paddy. I mean, there was a pile there, the likes, I was frightened someone was going to break the neck.
Scalacci, the little layoff pass out, he could be in trouble here. The Italians screaming forward. It's played out to Donadoni, left side of the penalty. Yeah, the shot goes in and Bonner parries it. The Scalacci gets the lead on the back of the net. And Italy take the lead and half fight for Ireland. The man who scored the goals in the World Cup, Toto Scalacci, gets a lucky break and Italy lead 1-0.
I felt that we were never going to be, that Ireland would never be allowed to beat Italy in the quarterfinals of a World Cup in Italy. That was just me thought. I mean, there was only one goal, and when there's one goal in a game, it means we could have scored that goal first, or they could have scored it first. The one that did score it first finished up winning the game. But it was that close. And had we got through and gone and played Argentina, I would have certainly fancied us.
And as you join us, you can see the huge crowd gathered here in College Green. And they've been waiting here for 4 or 5 hours, most of them, and just drink in that atmosphere. It really is quite fantastic.
I achieved most things. I won most cups, most of this. I've won virtually every honour in the game except the European Championship. And I've been a footballer of the year, been player of the year, been all sorts of things. Manager of the year. So everything has come in its way very nicely to me. But I like to think that I've worked very hard at the business as well. Because there's nobody in the world knows football like me. Never, never, never say no.